Shiva Goswami wrote a very nice Mangala Charana to the Brahma Samhita. Mangala Charana means a prayer which is offered by the author of a particular book before he begins the Shastra. And oftentimes it is seen that in the Mangala Charana, the actual conclusion of the Shastra is there, or the essence or summary of the whole book is contained in the Mangala Charana. Sometimes it's not so explicit. If you read between the lines, you can see, because you see different books have different Mangala Charanas. The same author, he writes many books, but he doesn't write the same prayers, different ones. And they have different moods and bhavas, because those different moods and bhavas and siddhantas are contained in that particular shastra. So Jiva Goswami, he wrote a nice prayer, or we say in English, a auspicious prayer of invocation, Mangala Charana. So the translation to his prayer is, "Within my heart, I worship the splendor of Krishna's transcendental form. I desire that by Krishna's mercy, I will be able to explain." Although the Brahma Samhita is a very difficult book, the commentaries of the sages have made it easy to understand. "My words follow their explanations. Although the Brahma Samhita contains 100 chapters, because this chapter, chapter 5, describes Krishna's transcendental form, it is the best. The same transcendental sweetness the pure-hearted devotees see in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vaishnava Shastras is also present in the Brahma Samhita. For this reason, my heart is now very happy. After due reflection in this book, I have lightly touched on some topics, on the same topics, more elaborately explained in my Krishna Sandarbha." So the first verse, which we're going to start today, we'll read the verse and then the translation and purport. Try to explain so we understand the basic language of the verse and purport, and then have some discussion. So on page 1, text 1, Brahma Samhita. We can chant again this verse together, page 1. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karna Karna. Translation: Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Godhead. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, and he is the prime cause of all causes. Purport: Krishna is the exalted supreme entity, having his eternal name, eternal form, eternal attribution, and eternal pastimes. Attribution means attributes, gunas, qualities, characteristics, right? Nam, rupam, guna, lila. The very name Krishna, Ishvara Parama Krishna, implies his love-attracting designation, expressing by his eternal nomenclature the acme of entity. This can also be phrased like this, in case you didn't understand that one. The name Krishna means, or it refers to Krishna's characteristic of attracting all living entities, which is expressed in his eternal name, which is the topmost description of the entity known as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is another translation of the same sentence. Sometimes I'm trying to make the original sentence in a more easier language, because this is a little difficult. In other words, it's one thing about the Brahma Samhita, many devotees, they look at it and they say, "Oh, that's too difficult, I don't understand it, forget it, I won't read it." But actually, it's really a language problem, because most of us, English is our second or third language. That's the first point against us. And if English is our first language, it's not this English. This English is far, far away from our first language. For those whose English is the first language, this seems like a foreign language. What to speak of others? So it is our attempt to somehow put this in universal English, which is understood by the modern class of devotees, or at least our equal class, let's say. So Krishna's name is, he attracts everyone with his name, and it's his eternal name, that's what it says. So it goes on. Krishna's eternal, beautiful, heavenly-tinged body, glowing with the intensity, you can read along, it's in the book, you just read. You listen and read, it's very good. Krishna's beautiful, page 2 on the top. Krishna's beautiful, heavenly, blue-tinged body, glowing with the intensity of ever-existing knowledge, has a flute in both his hands. In other words, Krishna is the color of blue rain cloud. And he's glowing with the Brahman. And the Brahman is full of this Samvit Shakti. In other words, cognizance, knowledge, consciousness, Brahman. Basically, that's what it says. As Krishna's, when I says is, his, I say Krishna. Okay? As Krishna's inconceivable spiritual energy is all extending, still, he maintains his all-charming medium size by his qualifying spiritual instrumentals. Okay, who can tell me what that means? So, save time. What is medium size? Krishna's medium size. Means he's size 7 or size 11? Size 38, 36? What is medium size? Medium size means human form. He's human-like. He's not Viratarup. He's not Anoraniyan. He's not smaller than the smallest. He's not bigger than the biggest. He's not the Viratarupa. He's sweet and lovable. We can see him eye to eye. Right? He stands and we look at him. We don't have to hold our head up. Wow. It's like some huge monster or something. No, he's eye to eye friend. Heart to heart. Arm to arm. So this is the human-like feature, medium size. And then it's qualifying spiritual instrumentals. Actually, I have the notes from Professor Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, who's really gave this class. I didn't have a chance to attend his class, but I have his notes, and he really did his homework, that's for sure. But in his notes, he gave definitions of all these different words. So if anyone's interested to increase their vocabulary, they can come after class, qualifying instrumentals. But I'll paraphrase it so you understand. So what it means is that Krishna maintains his medium size by his possessing transcendental qualities and senses. Right? It says his qualifying spiritual instrumentals. That means he has transcendental qualities and senses, but he appears in a human-like form and displays his pastimes, which are Nara-lila or human-like lila. Then it says, his all-accommodating supreme subjectivity is nicely manifested in his eternal form. So it can also be said, Krishna is a transcendental autocrat who can harmonize everything within his beautiful form automatically. So the word subjectivity means personal, right? Subject and object. So he has, and within Krishna's personal form, he can accommodate all other persons. You're a person, and you want to love Krishna as a friend, a sakha. So Krishna will love you as a friend. He can accommodate. He has room for you. He has room for that. You want to love Krishna as your son, or as your beloved, or as a maidservant, or queen, or a sakhi, lover. Krishna, within his personal form, he can fulfill your wish. Then, the concentrated all-time presence, uncovered knowledge, and inebriating felicity have their beauty in him. So, does anyone understand what that means? This is what it means. It means truth, immortal consciousness, and divine ecstasy have their full glory in Krishna with absolute concentrated intensity. That's what they mean. That's what it means. In other words, within Krishna's form, with his transcendental form, he has unlimited truth, all knowledge, all truth, all beauty, and it's concentrated, unlimited. Now, the mundane manifested portion of his own self is known as the all-pervading Paramatma, Ishvara or Vishnu, all-fostering. So this simply means that the Paramatma, the omnipresent Supersoul, and then the Almighty God or Ishvara, Vishnu, is the maintainer. But these are but a portion of his intrinsic self manifested within the material world. In other words, this Ishvara aspect, the Mahavishnu, Paramatma, these are all aspects, manifestations of Krishna which we experience in this world. Now we go on. Hence, it is evident that Krishna is the Supreme Godhead. Right? In other words, by these different things that have been mentioned, we can therefore understand that Krishna is the only Supreme Godhead. He is the Supreme Ishvara, Ishvara Parama Krishna. In other words, this is a commentary on the phrase Ishvara Parama Krishna. That's the verse, Ishvara Parama. So how is he Ishvara Parama Krishna? Now the next two paragraphs are full of words like felicitous cognition, indolent, presentment, penumbra, primordial. We don't know what these mean. So these same two paragraphs have been translated by one of my godbrothers. Although Krishna's infinite transcendental senses and qualities are all clearly distinct and separate from one another, by his inconceivable potency, Achintya Shakti, they are all perfectly situated and eternally appearing in one absolutely charming, unrivaled, transcendental form. In other words, Krishna has so many qualities, and so many attributes, and so many different facets of his personality, and many of them seem to be contradictory to one another. He's sweet, but he's sour. He's hard, but he's soft. He's mean, but he's nice. Isn't it? All these different aspects, but so they're all within his form. That divine form is non-different from Krishna. And the self of Krishna is that divine form. In other words, we have a self, Atma, and we have a form. Right? We have our body. But Krishna's form, his rupam, and his self, it is one. There's no difference between his. In other words, we say Satchidananda Vigraha, which is part of the verse, Ishvara Parama Satchidananda Vigraha. So this is explaining how his Vigraha, his form, his rupam, his murti, is non-different from his self. It is one. Simply all these attributes. So concentrated truth, concentrated rasam, concentrated qualities and pastimes. That divine form is the self of Krishna, and the self of Krishna is that divine form. Krishna's spiritual form is the entity of absolute concentrated personality, knowledge, and ecstasy, right? Sat-chit ananda. And it also includes the formless spirit or Brahman. In other words, Krishna is formless and Krishna has a form. That's what's being said. What is Brahman? Brahman is the unconcentrated principle of being, cognizance, and bliss. Just like the sun is the concentrated principle of heat and light. And at one place there's so much heat and there's so much light and so much power. Right? But when the sunlight spreads throughout the universe, we feel some on our back, and maybe a little less in the winter, but there's some heat and some light. And we feel a lot more in the summer, a lot more heat and light. But if we were to travel to the sun planet, we would be finished. much more concentration. So even in Brahman, even in the Brahman effulgence, which is the impersonal aspect of the Lord, it's the formless, non-differentiated aspect, still, you must have these qualities of Sat-Chit-Ananda. But as Jiva Goswami explains, they are not concentrated, they're diluted. There is Ananda in Brahman. What is it called? Brahmananda. There is Ananda in the personal form of Krishna, in exchange with Ras, with his eternal loving servants. What is that called? It's called Premananda. But Ananda is there, Sat-Chit-Ananda. And the effulgence of Brahman is also eternal, and cognizance is there. There's awareness of the Lord. There's understanding and knowledge of God in the Brahman, but not like the understanding, awareness, and knowledge of the residents of Vrindavan. They understand everything about Krishna. So when you have a personal relationship with the Lord, your understanding of the Lord, your chit feature, you understand much more of the chit feature, Sat-Chit-Ananda, and you experience much more. That's what's being said here. This is all the commentary on the verse, Ishvara Paramakrishna. The spiritual form of Krishna is in itself without any origin, right? Anadir, anadi. Adi means beginning or origin. Adi lila, the beginning lila. Adi lila, anadir. There's no beginning. So that's being, in other words, Krishna's form. Some people they challenge, they say, oh, you have a beginning, everyone has a beginning. Well, who created God? Who created him? Where did he come from? This is foolish people, they say like that, or innocent people sometimes. No, that's his prerogative, that's his definition. Definition of God is the absolute infinite, from whom everything comes from. There's no origin to God. If there's an origin to God, that origin is God. In other words, if God has an origin, that origin is greater than him, because it has the power to create him. So you see that God himself can't go further than that. So that self-same Krishna is the origin of Brahman Paramatma, and he's served by Sri, the original goddess of fortune. He's known as Govinda, who may be viewed according to his pastimes as Gopati. Now we're analyzing the word Govinda, right? Ishvara Paramakrishna is such an anadir Govinda, right? Govinda, what is Govinda? So this Jiva Goswami is explaining. Go means Gopati, the lord of the cows, means Gopapati, the lord of the coward men, or means Gopipati, the lord of the coward girls, or Gokulapati, the lord of Gokula, right? Then Gokulapati, the lord of the abode of the cows, Golabgopati. So Krishna is the predominator and the predominated, means he controls and he is controlled, right? He is the cause of all causes, incited by the glance of his fractional predominated descent. In other words, it's describing his Purusha avatar. Fractional, in other words, Krishna expands in a very small portion of himself as the Purusha avatars. And they have some of his powers and some of his energies, and they perform different functions. So that describes, you know, that those last two paragraphs. Now, in some of the notes that we have here, it describes what is this verse of the first verse of the Brahma Samhita. There's a term that maybe you've heard that's used by acharyas, that this is Paribhasa Sutra. And we have an outline we'll give you also. I'll give you that too. Paribhasa Sutra. So in Krishna Sandarbha, Paribhasa Sutra basically in simple language means the theme, the verse or the sutra, the verse, the sentence, the theme of the work. That sutra, that shloka from which the whole work expands. So for the Brahma Samhita, the Paribhasa Sutra is this, Ishvara Parama Krishna. So in each shastra there is a particular Paribhasa Sutra. So Jiva Goswami in Krishna Sandarbha, he defines that, and we'll read the definition that he uses. And also, he mentions what is the Paribhasa Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the essential shloka of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, which the whole Srimad Bhagavatam expands from and defines and explains. Ete chamsha kala pumsa. I think that's in first canto, what, third chapter, 28th verse? I think so. It's written here somewhere. But in that verse, it says, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Everyone knows this line, right? Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. That Krishna, Ishvara Parama Krishna, that we're talking about in this verse, that same Krishna, he's the Swayam Bhagavan. Swayam, he's the original. His personal form is the origin of all their Bhagavans, all their avatars and incarnations. So that is that verse, the whole Bhagavatam establishes how Krishna is the Swayam, and not Ram. Ram is not the Swayam. The Das avatars are not the Swayams. The different Shaktivesh avatars and different personalities, so many different personalities and incarnations are mentioned. Varaha and Vamanadeva. You won't know, the whole Bhagavatam describes the different avatars. But it ultimately describes, always connects with Krishna, the Sarva Avatari. Krishna is the source of all the avatars. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, there's also a Paribhasa Sutra. And I'm not sure what it is. If anyone knows, they can tell me. We heard this morning, we inquired from some friends, but I'm not satisfied with the answer I got. I'm not convinced. Because I didn't hear it directly. I heard it, someone did me a favor and inquired about it. But the person said 12th chapter verse 13, which I don't think is correct. I think we didn't get the question correct, or he didn't give the answer correct. But now let's go to another shot. So you can try to inquire, because I don't know myself. I'll try to find the answer. What is the Paribhasa Sutra in Bhagavad Gita? I'm thinking it's 10.8 myself. 10th chapter verse 8, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. Because in that verse, it establishes two things very clearly. One thing is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the other point that it mentions, that everything comes from Him, which means that every possible conception comes from Him, every possible way to love Him and serve Him comes from Him. So that means Madhurya Ras comes from Him, Sakhi Ras, Vatsali Ras, all rasas. That all is included in that meaning of Aham Sarvasya Prabhu Mata Sarvam Pravartate. You know, that I establish and everything comes from me and everything is within me. So that means that any possible way to love the Lord, so that includes the Ishvara Tattva, which is discussed in Bhagavad Gita, and the Jiva Tattva. And now the other tattvas are just in their sambandha, the time and karma and prakriti. Because the basic, so that's what Bhagavad Gita is all about. It's about God and man, or about me and God, basically, right? Anyway, I'm not convinced. But anyway, now the Chaitanya Charitamrita. What is the verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita? Does anyone have one of those Gaudiya Kantahars? Anybody has in their hand? That verse is Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse 4. Anarpita Chiram. You know that verse? Unat Ujvala Rasa Subhakti Priyam. That's the phrase. I know that because Prabhupada quotes it a lot. But that's the verse. Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse 4. That is the Paribhasa Sutra for Chaitanya Charitamrita. Basically, it explains the paraphrase that the golden avatar, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is non different from Krishna himself. He's come into this world to establish a very, very special type of prema, or special type of rasa, that's never been established by any other avatar in any other age. And what is that? Unat Ujvala Rasa, Sobhakti Priyam, which means basically Unat Ujvala Ras. Ujvala Ras means Madhurya Prem. I mean, to establish the supremacy of that, although he broadcast, you know, all the rasas, but this verse is saying that Ujvala Rasa, Sobhakti Priyam, which is his own prema, which can be taken to mean Braja Bhakti, or in the fullest definition, Ujvala Ras means this Madhurya Ras. So that verse is there. So Jiva Goswami, he defines in his Krishna Sandarbha, we can just read the definition. He says that, what does Paribhasa mean? It means a definition of terms or a system of abbreviations placed in the beginning of a book, which we have to understand in order to properly understand the remainder of the book. This Paribhasa Sutra gives the key to the understanding of the whole book. Right? You put the key in the door and then you're in the room and all the treasures are there. So if we understand this verse, then we can have the key to the whole Brahma Samhita. Practically speaking, everyone knows this verse. This is one of the most well-known verses of the Brahma Samhita, isn't it? Of course, we also know two other verses. I should hope so. Veinam kavantam haravim. So it's nice. The verse we establish in this one, Ishvara Parama Krishna, we establish his position as the Absolute Supreme. And the other two verses we establish his sweetness. So every day we see the sweetness of Krishna, we glorify the sweetness, right? And also his transcendental position of interchangeable senses and transcendental form, Angana Yasya Sakala. So this is the key to understanding any particular book. It gives the key in which one can understand the purport of a series of apparently unrelated facts and arguments. Now, this is an interesting definition. He says, the Parivasa Sutra gives the key by which you can understand an apparently unrelated group of arguments and verses. In other words, you're reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, or you're reading, say, Brahma Samhita, and you say, okay, the key to this book, the summary, the theme of this book is Krishna's the Supreme. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has a beautiful form, he's the Supreme Controller and all this. Now you start reading verses, Mahavishnu and Ramadevi and Ganesh and Ganapati and Surya. And, what's that have to do with Krishna? That doesn't have to do. You know, you might think it's tangential or that you're going off this way or that way. It doesn't seem to be keeping on the point, going around about. So this is... The idea is that you keep this over your head. Whenever you're reading a particular shastra, you should always keep in mind that whatever chapter you're reading or whatever philosophical direction you're going in that particular book, you must see how it's connected and you must try in your own meditation. And of course, the acharya is given the purports of those verses. They always connect everything and weave weave that Parivasa Sutra into every purport of every verse in that book. Even though the particular verses may seem tangential or unrelated to that theme. So that's why it's very important to have commentaries on Shastra. Because sometimes you read the Shastra and the verses and storyline and the plot of the particular book are taking you far away from your desired goal. You know, you want to worship Krishna and you want to love Krishna in a particular mood or no mood, but just you want to worship Radha Krishna, Krishna Balaram, whomever. But then you're reading different chapters of Bhagavatam, you know, the demons and they're churning the ocean of milk and this and that. And you know, you say, what's this? You know, where's this going? Where's the 10th canto? Yeah, okay, it's good. You just want to read the 10th canto, and that's good also if you have an attraction for that somehow. But the thing is, you'll see your 10th canto, you'll see your sweet Lord or your worshipful Lord in that ocean also, in that ocean of milk. And you'll see some of his features and aspects there. So it is all given for our... It's all necessary for us. So this is what Jiva Goswami is defining. A very nice way he says it. Then in the Bhagavatam, that verse is there. So that verse in the Bhagavatam, Ete Chamsa Kalapamsa, Krishna's two Bhagavatam, it says that in Krishna Sandarbha, he comments on this, and he says that this verse, it tells the secret of Krishna's birth and gives a summary of all descriptions of the Lord's incarnations. Because it comes in the beginning of book, and because it describes what will follow later on, it is Ete Chamsa Kalapamsa. It's the Parivasa Sutra. It gives definitions of terms or systems of abbreviations like that. So, in other words, in that verse it says Krishna is the, you know, he's the source of, it says Indrari Vyakulam Mule, Ridyanti Yuge Yuge. He says that Krishna Ete Chamsa Kalapamsa, all the other expansions, they're just amshas, they're just parts of Krishna. So now then the Bhagavatam goes on to explain all the different expansions, Shaktivesha avatar and Purusha avatar, and one after the other. So that the Brahma Samhita will in the same way explain. Now we can go through, and these paragraphs here, we can look back at these paragraphs and try to understand a little bit. In the first paragraph, what's basically a summary of the first paragraph, as I just, you know, kind of reading some notes. I mean, I don't propose to sit here. I mean, I'm not getting a salary. I'm here on my own free time. You're not getting paid? I'm not getting paid. And I'm trying to understand the book along with you. So I don't have any title up here that says professor. There's nothing on the door. There's nothing on my head. I'm just, you're the student, I'm the student. So we're kind of having satsang. Sitting together with a desire to understand the eternal. That's satsang. Sangha means associate, Anga, right? Anga means body. Sa means many. So many bodies sit together and they try to understand the eternal. Right? Satsang. So there are many bodies here. Many arms, many legs, many Angas. So I am an Anga and you're an Anga. So over there is the Sat, Satchitananda, Krishna. So I have some notes and I'll speak some things and like that. So don't mind if I read now and again from my notes, because I haven't memorized all these things. So in this first paragraph, I'll just read some notes and we can discuss also that. Basically, in the first paragraph, what's happening is that in this commentary, there's this discussion. You can see that it talks about Krishna's first paragraph. It talks about his greatness, right? His greatness, his majesty, his Aishwarya, right? So there's Aishwarya Gyan, and then there's Madhurya Gyan. So there's devotees that are attracted to Krishna's Aishwarya. This is described in Vrag Bhartman Chandrika. So they're Aishwarya Gyan Bhaktas. And then there's devotees that are attracted to the sweetness of Krishna. So they're known as Madhurya Gyan Bhaktas. Right? So in this commentary in the first paragraph, he's just explaining, because that's what this verse says. Ishvara Parama, Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha. He's the Ishvara. He has so much power. He's controlling every atom, everything. But at the same time, then he's very sweet. Because he's Krishna, then he'll go on to explain how he's a Phalamananda. Usually someone who's a very powerful controller, they're showing power and majesty and opulence. They're not showing sweetness and joy and bliss. It's a very dominating position. So this is basically what's going on there. Explains that. The second paragraph just explains about the different attributes of Krishna. Now, in Jiva Goswami's commentary, which is summarized here by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he takes each word of this verse and he explains what it means. Because this verse, as we know, is full of Nam Sankirtan. So unknowingly, Lord Brahma, he's writing at the beginning of time, or Lord Chaitanya is writing, as we mentioned yesterday, Bhaktivinoda says someone may argue that Lord Chaitanya wrote this book. Well, that's very great, because it's such a wonderful book, perfectly summarizing our Siddhanta. But assuming we believe that Lord Chaitanya found it, and it is an old scripture, then it was written by Lord Brahma. Well, when was it written? 500 years ago? 1,000 years ago? It was written millions and millions of years ago. This is his diary. This is Brahma's diary, right? You keep a diary. Well, one day I was meditating, and then this divine personality, she came to me. I was bewildered. I didn't know what my duty was. And this divine personality came to me and said, "Hey, Krishnadas, you're bewildered. You want the answer? You want to know? You want to realize what the answer to your doubt? Remove your doubts and here, take this mantra." "Oh, well, who are you?" And she disappears. Poof. And he says, "Oh, that's a nice mantra. Klim Krishnaya Govindaya." Right? And he starts chanting. Then he's chanting and he starts to feel illumination within himself, starts to see the light, have an experience. Then, "Oh, what am I hearing? There's been a vacuum for thousands of years. I haven't heard anything. It's darkness. I haven't seen anything or heard anything or touched anything. Now I'm hearing this wonderful sound, such a sweet sound, such an attractive sound of Krishna's flute." Right? So that's what happened to Brahma. So then he's writing this down. "Oh, today I had this experience. I had this. So this is what this is. It's Brahma's diary. It's his Samhita. It's his law book. It's a law book because it establishes Siddhanta. It's more than just a diary. But it's a diary because it talks about events. What is a diary? And what is your diary? It has your blood inside, has your sweat inside, has your tears inside. It describes your moods and meditations, your happiness and distress, and maybe your chronology. Oh, today, like Prabhupada, if you read Prabhupada's diary, today I met with Sumati Murarji. She granted me one passage on the Jaladutta. And then the next entry, I spent 27 rupees for carrots and vegetables. And I spent 3 rupees on the tram and 1 rupee on the notebook and 50 paise on a pen." And then, like that. So Prabhupada wrote all these things in his diary, where he went, And sometimes he says, oh, I'm on the Jaladuta, it's a very peaceful day, like that. Krishna's so kind. So it talks about events, people you meet, places you go. So this is also a diary, but it's mostly Siddhanta. So unknowingly, the point I'm making is that he's writing this book millions of years ago, and he's writing a book where he's actually presenting Nam Sankirtan. With his Paribhasa Sutra, he's giving Nam Sankirtan. He's actually predicting the appearance of Lord Chaitanya in the Brahma Samhita. Because Lord Chaitanya, who found this and was so elated and ecstatic, which we heard yesterday, Sweta Kampa, Romancha Kampa, Ashu, all these symptoms of ecstasy raced through his body when he read and contacted the scripture. So Lord Chaitanya was so happy because the whole essence of the book is Ishvara Parama Krishna, it's Nam Sankirtan, Krishna. Sanjeeva Goswami, he goes through and analyzes this. So in this verse you have, what kind of Nam Sankirtan you have? You have primary Nam and you have secondary Nam, Gona Nam and Mukya Nam. There's names that give you prema because they're full of Leela, right? Full of Leela Amrit. And they're names that give you Sambandha or Tattva. They give you the understanding of God. And they're like Aishvarya Gyan, Ishvara. The name Ishvara or Parameshvara, what is that? That's called secondary name of God. It's called Gona Nam. Because chanting that name, Parameshvara, like some people they say in India, there's a famous song, Jaya Jagadisha Hare, and they say da da da. There's all these different lines, and they say that line, which is the same as Gita Govinda, Jaya Jagadisha Hare, but they have so many other lines that I don't know the lines of Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Like. So you say Jagadish, 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 that will not give you prema. That will not take you to Braja Gokul. But you say Krishna, Hari, Ram, Govinda, Gopal, Shamsundar, Damodar, Madhav, Giridhari, these names will take you to Braja Gokul. They're full of Leela. Everyone knows, this is old stuff. This is Harinam Chintamani. So this verse is full of primary and secondary Nam, which means primary names. Mukya Nam is called Prema, it's full of Prema, and this is Madhurya. This is Madhurya Gyan. And secondary names, this is the Aishvarya Gyan, or Aishvarya Tattva. Jiva Goswami, he breaks down, what is this word Krishna? This is repetition for most people. Krishna means, he says it means transcendental existence. First he explains a kind of an outward meaning. He says, the syllable Krishna means transcendental existence. And na means ananda, or it means pleasure pastimes, ananda lila. So this is Krishna. So then he says, ultimately, what does it mean? It means that Krishna is full of transcendental bliss, and with his beautiful transcendental form, he's attracting everyone and filling them with happiness. So this is Krishna. When we're chanting Krishna's name, oh Krishna, oh Hare Krishna. You're so attractive, you're so sweet. Just like one pastime is there, because now it's rainy season, so soon in the next month or so, the kadambas start coming. Now slowly, sometimes here and there, but kadamba flowers will start coming. So sometimes when Radhika is separated from Krishna, and she's moving in Vrindavan, looking here and there, she comes to the kadamba tree. And as everyone knows, kadamba tree is very favored with Krishna. Kadamba tree takes part in all the different leelas, right? Especially in Sakiras and in Madhurya Ras. Krishna likes to climb in the kadamba trees when he wants to call his cows. And he likes to sleep under the kadamba trees with the coward boys. And the Kali Kadamba, he climbs up there. And then in kadamba tree in Kaliya Daha, there's the kadamba tree when he vanquished the Kaliya serpent. And then in Nandagat, where Katyayani was worshipped by the gopis, there's a kadamba tree there, Gopi Vastraharana. So many different rasas and types of pastimes are on the kadamba tree. So it's a very, very dear tree to Krishna. And when Radharani sees the kadamba tree, she's thinking of Krishna and remembers Krishna. Also when she sees tamal tree, she thinks of Krishna, but also kadamba. So then when she sees a kadamba tree, she says, oh kadamba tree, where's my Krishna? You're so sweet. The flowers of Kadamba are so sweet. You're so sweet. You have such a sweet fragrance. Where is my sweetness gone now? Can you please tell me where my sweetness is gone? Because you're full of sweetness, and I'm looking for that sweetness. Please tell me where my sweet Krishna has gone. Right, this is described. And Jiva Goswami explains the sweetnesses of Krishna, his Madhurya Rupam, his Veno Madhurya, Rupa Madhurya, Prema Madhurya. Right, these four sweetnesses are there, Leela Madhurya. So Radharani is appealing. So Jiva Goswami says, this Krishna means that Krishna has such a sweet form, such a sweet, beautiful, transcendental form, that he's attracting us. He's attracting our senses. He's attracting our heart. And once he attracts us, and we stick there, just like sometimes you're attracted, you come close, then you run away. You're attracted to Krishna, so you approach him. And then when you're attracted to Krishna, if we stay with Krishna, and we stick on Krishna, then what happens? Because we have to stick on him for a little bit. We have to stay with him for a little bit. Then what will he do? He'll fill us with Ananda. Krishna, Krish, Ananda. So Krishna means he attracts, like Karshati. Karshati means Karshan, Sankarshan, attracting everyone. So Krishna attracts us with his beauty, with his sweetness. And then we go there, but then we always run away. Right? We always run to some other attractions that are non-Krishna, a-Krishna. Right? Non-Krishna. So we stay there, then we'll get stuck. And we can't run away. That's like Prabhupada used to say that when people were trying to take away devotees, there was one devotee, his parents were very rich. And Prabhupada was saying, see this devotee? His parents, they could give him millions of dollars and he would not leave Krishna. Because he's stuck on Krishna. He's attracted on Krishna. Just like someone the other day, one devotee was saying, see, yes, I go here and there and I'm looking here and there for guru and different spiritual ideas and I hear different things. But actually, ultimately, I can't forget Krishna. Krishna's too sweet, he's too lovable, he's too attractive. No matter where I go or what I hear or what I do, I always end up coming back to the same point. K-R-S-N-A, Krishna. So this Jiva Goswami is explaining this Krishna. Now the Ishvara, because it's Ishvara Parama Krishna. So he just says Ishvara means what? Supreme Controller. That's all he says. Then Parama. He gives very nice definitions here, because whenever you have Krishna, is he ever by himself? Is he just standing there alone? Sometimes, but very rarely. There's always somebody there. His parrot devotees are in the tree, or his coward boys are nearby, or they're with him. He's always with his devotees. That's why when somebody would paint a picture with Krishna all by himself, no cows, no animals, no anything, Prabhupada would say, what is this? This is your Mayavadi conception. Krishna's not alone, just like you want to be alone with Krishna somewhere, but Krishna is always with everybody. Of course, you can also feel that he's alone with you, and that experience can also be there. So, as soon as you have Krishna, then who do you automatically have? You have Krishna and all his associates. It's like now we're chanting Krishna's name, but all we're having is the name. We're not even understanding. We don't even understand or realize what is the name. But ultimately, when you have the name, you'll have all of Krishna, which means you'll have his Leela. When you have his Leela, you have all his associates, right? Mother, father, friends, girlfriends, brother, holy dham, everything. So in this verse, Krishna's standing there in this verse, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Govinda. So if Krishna's there and Govinda's there, then who must be there? Coward boys must be there, the cows must be there, the gopis must be there. So then next verse, the next word, Jiva Goswami kind of opens our eyes to this understanding that you should understand. If you see a verse, Ishvara Parama, so you should think. If, for example, you see the word Krishna, then you must think, well, wait a minute, if Krishna's there, where are the coward boys? Where are the coward boys in this verse? You know, Krishna's there, and when I think of Krishna, I think of Krishna with a coward boys. Or someone might say, well, Krishna's there. If Krishna's there, where are the gopis? When I see Krishna or think of Krishna, I think of the gopis. Or when Krishna's there, where's Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj? And I like cows. You know, I just like cows. I don't know about gopis and gopas. That's too much. That's too high for me. I just like cows. You know, I want to be in the goshala and do goseva, and you know, I just want to stay on that level. I don't know about these other things. I'm too fallen. Okay, fine. So Krishna's there. Where are the cows? Right? So then, they're there. They're all there. But then Jiva Goswami, he gives us the eyes to see, right? Oman gana timirandasya, gananjana, right? Shalaka. So, he says, para means supreme, right? Para and apara. So para means supreme, and ma means mother. right? Mata, maternal, mother, ma, mama. So he says, para ma, the supreme mother. Hey, wait a minute. Who's that supreme mother? Well, Krishna's with Yashoda. Ishvara Parama Krishna. Well, yeah, Yashoda and Krishna. Yashoda Nandan. How nice. You can just chant one shloka from the Brahma Samhita and you can be lost for days. What? Brahma Samhita? That's not Rasa Shastra. That, I don't like that. Give me the Govinda Lilamrita, Krishna Bhavanamrita, Sankalpa Kalpa Dhruma, da 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 da. Right? But Jiva Goswami, you know, he can go there. He can take one word. And at least we can appreciate. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I attended his class years ago. He said, "We want to hear. We don't understand this book, but we want to hear from this book to just appreciate it. To appreciate this book, and to appreciate the commentaries by the acharyas. And by our humble appreciation and sincere desire to understand, maybe they will bless us with some understanding." I remember he said like that. So he says, "Parama means." So, those in the mood of Vatsalya, they'll see, oh, there's Yashoda. Yashoda Parama Krishna. So then he goes on. Says, Paramas, therefore refers to the goddess of fortune. The goddesses of fortune are Krishna's internal potencies. And then it goes on to the note, explains that in the entire commentary in this verse, Jiva Goswami spends practically the entire commentary describing this word Parama. He spends a long time describing Govinda also. But practically the entire commentary. So when he starts to say the goddess is a fortune, Parama, Krishna. So para means transcendental or topmost. And ma means consorts or female personalities, shaktis. So he quotes different resources from Bhagavatam to explain that ultimately when you talk about the Parama Maas, in other words, the biggest Maas, let's say, the biggest mothers, the biggest female personalities, you'll go to the Dwarka Queens, you'll go to the Dwarka Queens and then you'll go to Vrindavan, Mother Yashoda, Rohini, but ultimately you'll end up with the Gopis. So then he cites, Jiva Goswami cites in Bhagavatam, some references that Ishvara Parama Krishna, the word Parama refers to, actually refers to the queens of Dwarka, and the origin or the topmost queens of Dwarka are the Sakhis of Vrindavan. So in 10th canto, chapter 59, verse 53, he quotes a verse, full of transcendental bliss, Krishna enjoyed pastimes with the beautiful gopis, who were all goddesses of fortune. This is also explained. This is from Bhagavatam, 59th chapter. So how is it that the gopis are goddesses of fortune? Because actually the original shaktis are Radharani and she expands into the gopis. But in Padma Purana it explains that those young girls that were coward girls in their youth, when they grew up they became the queens of Dwarka. Means their expanded forms. They expand to become the Mahishis. And then Jiva quotes 47th chapter, 60th verse, in relation to defining the word Parama. When Krishna was dancing with the gopis in Ras Lila, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This transcendental favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune or the other consorts in the spiritual world. Indeed, never was such a thing even imagined by the most beautiful girls in the heavenly planets, whose bodily luster and aroma resemble the lotus flower. What to speak of worldly women, who are very beautiful according to material estimation. So this is chapter 47, the 10th canto. This is Uddhava speaking about the wonderful position. Having come from Mathura, Uddhava was able to witness the gopis. He was aware of the queens of Mathura. He was aware of the apsaras and all the different female personalities. But when he came to Vrindavan and he saw the extraordinary love of the gopis, then he was amazed and he spoke several verses. There's a group of prayers in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, very nice prayers, where Uddhava chanted these prayers every day for the 2 months he stayed in Vrindavan. And in those prayers he glorifies the gopis like this, and he also says that, I want to take birth in Vrindavan as a gulmalata, as a little creeper. And of course we know that place is Kusum Sarovara. So if you want to realize what it means to be Trinadapi Sunichena Tulari Vasahishana, Trina means grass. Once you think of oneself lower than a blade of grass. So Krishna's most confidential associates, they're thinking, let me become a blade of grass in Vrindavan, and then maybe Krishna's dearest devotees will step on me. So Uddhava is there. He's there on the banks of Kusum Sarovara and some of the little weeds over there, lata, some goma lata, which I don't know what that is, but it's described in Sanskrit. So you can go there and pray to that Uddhava Mahashaya. You are the great Mahashaya. You're one of the great Haridasas. Please bless me that I can develop this humility and someday qualify to enter Braja Gokul. So then he quotes another verse from Bhagavatam. Although the son of Devaki, Devaki Nandan, is also the reservoir of all kinds of beauty, when he's among the gopis, as he showed Nandan, he is nonetheless becomes more beautiful, for he resembles a blue sapphire surrounded by gold and other jewels. Then he quotes Brahma Samhita. And so that's how he describes Parama. He just says it. And Brahma Samhita describes that long verse. And there he says, and Swetadvita Lakshmis and their unalloyed spiritual essence practice the amorous service of the Supreme Lord as their only lover. So now he goes on to explain the word Govinda. When we chant we'll get to this later, but when we chant the Gopal mantra, those that are Brahman initiated, Klim Krishnaya Govindaya Gopijana Valo, we will see that depending on if we coming in that mood or that line, depending on our inner heart, these particular words, that's what's explained, we'll get to that, how they're arranged in different ways, they produce different leelas. So Krishnaya Govindaya Gopinath. So when we say Krishnaya, then Krishnaya refers to Dwarka Krishna, refers to Krishna and Dwarka as the Yadunath or Krishna Mathura, because here, just like we have Vasudeva Krishna, then we have Yashodanandan Krishna, right? So this word, Klim Krishnaya, a person who's in the mood of Dwarka or Naishvarya, wants to worship Krishna with opulence, this word and this mantra, Gopal mantra, because when Brahma received the Gopal mantra, Saraswati said that your desire will be fulfilled by this mantra. Your desire for bhav, your desire for seva, your desire to, even your mundane desire for creative powers. So then you take the next word, Krishnaya refers to Dwarka, Mathura. But then when you go Govinda, then the Govinda brings you back to Vrindavan, right? So Govinda, for those devotees that are inclined towards worshipping Krishna as coward boy or in Sakhi Ras, Govinda will be, they'll see this Gopal mantra. Govinda will reveal all his glories and Sakhi Ras to them. Their sarup, his particular sarup in bhav. But then you have Krishnaya, Govindaya, then Gopinath. So those devotees that are in the mood of serving Gopinath in Mandri Bhav, Madhurya Bhav, this mantra will take them to that level. So this is what Jiva Goswami takes here in this word Govinda. He explains the different aspects of what Govinda in this verse means. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karna Karnam. So he explains that Krishna performs many pastimes in Dwarka and Mathura, where he's generally known as Krishna. But the term Govinda particularly is used to refer to Vrindavan. Of course, he cites the pastime, how did Krishna get the name Govinda? And he quotes the verses about the Indra Jagya and the Govardhan Leela, and how we'll read those, and how Krishna got the name Govinda. Because before that, he was Gopal, and Yashodanandan, but now after this pastime. So he says, the word Govinda is particularly used in Vrindavan. It refers to Krishna as satisfying the cows and the senses. And then he cites the pastime from Bhagavatam, several verses, where what happened was, as everyone knows, that Indra, he insulted all the Brijvasis and terrorized all the Vrindavan, all the cows and Brahmins and all the people and Krishna's devotees. And then Krishna held up Govardhan Hill, and then this Indra came in the shadow of the Surabhi cow under her protection, and then she offered prayers and he offered prayers. So in the conclusion to that, Shukadeva Goswami, he says, having thus appealed to Krishna, the Surabhi cow, performed the bathing ceremony of Krishna with her own milk. And Indra, ordered by Aditi and the other mothers of the demigods, anointed the Lord with heavenly Ganga water from Airavata, Indra's elephant carrier. After this bathing was done by all the demigods and great sages, then Indra coronated Krishna, and he gave him the name Govinda. And the verse is in 10:27, verse 23. He says, Govinda iti chabyadat. So there, the word Govinda, of course, means the protector of the cows and the protector of the land. Then he goes on to explain more about the cows. Jiva Goswami, this is a really long purport, and Bhaktisanta Saraswati just kind of extracted different aspects of this verse to put in our Brahma Samhita. But in here, he glorifies Krishna in relation to the cows, how he's the master. Govinda means the master of the Surabhi cows. Although sometimes people say the word Govinda means he who gives shelter, protection, because Indra means Lord, Master. Like Indra is the king or the master of heaven. So Krishna, he's the king or the master of the senses. You take shelter of him, you're protected. But Jiva says, moreover, actually Govinda refers specifically to the master of the Surabhi cows. And then he quotes from different shastras how that Krishna is the master of the Surabhi cows who are liberated souls descended to this world from Goloka Vrindavan, planet and the spiritual sky. So the Surabhi cows, just like we hear from Vrindavan Mahimamrita and other scriptures, the birds, the animals, they're not ordinary personalities. They're sages, they're rishis. In the case of the Surabhi cows, they're Krishna's associates. They come from the spiritual world to serve him in that way.